Good morning, my dear friends and colleagues from the insurance industry. My name is Ariel Rivera, and I am your host of Fun Insurance Solutions. Today, we have an amazing episode with the great Marcus Daly. Marcus is the technical co-founder of Neurometrics. He is a seasoned technology executive with experience spanning Fortune 500 companies to nimble startups. At Neurometrics, Marcus utilizes his expertise to leverage AI, yes people, AI, to help automate classification and risk assessment for instant commercial underwriting. I'm sure you're going to love this one, and you're going to learn a lot from Marcus. So before we get there, I want to give a huge shout out to our sponsors, Imperial Finance, IPFS, Imperial Finance. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, this is your solution for premium financing. They have wonderful technology, top-notch customer service. I mean, they got everything to help your clients, and also the great CoverDesk virtual assistant services. Listen, friends, if you need virtual assistance to help your agency with the back office, CoverDesk is your solution. Visit CoverDesk.com. Make sure you schedule a demo and tell them you're part of the Fun family. Let's have some fun. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, my dear friends and colleagues from the insurance industry. My name is Ariel Rivera, and I am your host of Fun Insurance Solutions. Today, we have a wonderful episode, and we're going to go down into technology, right? And I know I keep saying the same thing over and over. I love technology and all that. But listen, I am nowhere near as knowledgeable as the guy I'm about to interview, and you guys are all going to meet, the great Marcus Daly. Marcus is the CTO's Chief Technology Officer at 3E. He's also the executive partner at Next Horizon Capital. But more importantly, Marcus Daly is the technical co-founder of Neurometrics, which he's going to tell us all about it. So I am very honored to have you, Marcus, and we're about to blow everybody's mind with technology. How you doing, Marcus?
Good. Yeah, thank you for the introduction. It's great to be here. And you're right, I do love technology. That's what I've been doing for the last 30 years. So. A lot of fun.
It's, I can imagine. You went from what, plugging in computers, those big ones?
No, actually, you know, it's fun. I actually got a computer when I was a kid back in the late 70s, early 80s. We couldn't afford to buy games and software for it. I just got the box, you know? And so I started writing code on it. That was actually my first introduction to it. And I just, it, for whatever reason, like, drew me in. It was that I realized that was my destiny somehow.
That's awesome. Yeah. I can tell you, and again, you know, technology wise, things keep changing and changing and changing so much in technology that it's just impressive. I mean, we have come so far, and I can't even dream where we're headed. So with the AI and the ChatGPT and all that stuff that's going on. You're going to teach us a little bit about that today. So Marcus, tell me one thing. It's Friday. You had a wonderful week. I mean, Neurometrics is doing amazing. All your meetings went well. Everything is going on accordingly. You're at home at 7 o'clock. You want to relax with your family. You want to have one drink. You could have only one drink. What will be your drink of choice? There's no right or wrong. It could be rum, beer, wine, water, tea. I have had guests that say tea. What's your drink of choice?
Wow, that's a really, I've never been asked that question before, but I know that if you were to ask my employees, they would answer for me. So yeah, they always see me either drinking rock stars or monsters. So that would probably be 7 o'clock on Friday, what I'd be drinking. I mean, I literally work around the clock. You know, Friday, sometimes I just don't go to sleep. I'll just work through until Saturday night on something, you know, technology related usually. And I drink way too much caffeine.
Okay. Let's put it that way. Well, cheers to you, by the way. As we're speaking, I'm having a little bit of coffee.
Yeah.
The afternoon coffee. Yeah. It's Friday. It's been a long week, very busy, but it's been awesome.
Of course.
So Marcus, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me who's Marcus Daly. How did you become, you know, a chief technology officer? What got you into technology? And I mean, everybody that listens to the podcast, they want to learn who you are.
Well, like I said earlier, I got lucky. My family wasn't rich. You know, we were a lot of time on food stamps, actually, but we were fortunate enough to cobble together some money, get a machine for me as a kid, start working on that. And like I said, for some odd reason, it really drew me in. And Started talking with other kids around the block. You know, you actually go to the arcade and, other kids were working on computers and get to know kind of these little hacking groups and stuff. And it drew me in and just learned to love it. At the same time, I was actually doing sports too. I actually played football for Utah State University. So it's kind of funny because I was doing the technology side and the sports side. But for me, my true heart, even though sports is great, was always in the technology side. So I ended up getting injured. Midway through my college career, which then prevented me from being able to continue on. And the good news is that I had this thing that I was still passionate about, loved doing, which was technology. And that then drove me forward. Now, I dropped out of college, actually, because I was working on web technology. This is Web 1, the early days of the internet.
Wow.
And to be honest with you, it was not very popular then. There's all kinds of regulatory challenges and frustrations and around cryptography and everything else. But it drew me in. I loved it. I loved where it was going. I felt it was going to revolutionize the world. And so I worked heavily on that. I did eventually over time go back and finish my bachelor's and also my master's. But I also got involved with a number of international companies, Intel being a good example, Microsoft being another. These are Fortune 500 companies, but then also a lot of startups. And by having those experiences both within the startup realm, then the Fortune 500 realm, and then a lot of that being international, a lot of time in India, a lot of time in Russia, a lot of time in Latin America, I'll say, and throughout Asia generally, and living in Japan for a number of years, living in India, kind of developed this worldview, but also a view focused on technology. And I've kind of just developed this feeling that I've been lucky enough to enjoy my hobby as a job. The only thing that I would say, if I could leave anybody any advice who's maybe also interested in technology, is I will say that the travel part stuff, just because you end up missing a lot of time with your kids. And the problem is, if you're good at it, you're good at being able to get around and getting things done with different cultures and time zones and everything, people keep putting you into those roles.
Oh, they're going to want you, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing my for the last almost 30 years. But it's worked out really well. And I actually just have a quantum patent. For example, if you go on LinkedIn, you'll see it just came out a few weeks ago, built with some great colleagues of mine, and still on the front edge of technology with a lot of what I'm doing, and really proud of that. So.
That's awesome. What a wonderful story. I can take from your story that you have amazing parents that even though they did not have much, they went, out of the way to make sure you would get something, and especially something you love, which I can relate to that. So yeah, that's good for you. Another cool thing is, when being lucky meets opportunity, or an opportunity presents and you're lucky. You were blessed with, putting in, if you ever read the book Outliers, The History of Success from Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah,
great. So by the time you got here, you already put in the 10,000 hours, the 30,000 hours into it, which is amazing. So congratulations to you. I can even imagine how you see the world, in your own eyes with all the changes in technology and going from zero to where we are right now.
Yeah. No, it's been, I will say, I count myself lucky. Because you haven't gone through that you can see the evolution, but it also allows you to be able to look at the world from what's called a first principles perspective, because you can see where it started. You don't get caught up in some higher layer, of logic. And so it has benefited me a lot having that history, for sure.
I like that name, by the way. I never heard that before. The first principles, that how you say it?
Yeah, first principles. Yep.
That's pretty cool. That's amazing. And it's true. We didn't have cell phones. So I was born in the early 80s. So there was no cell phones, no anything. And I feel, the difference, even my mom, my grandma ended up having a cell phone. My 86-year-old grandma had Facebook, and she would just post everywhere. What years before was the radio, AM shows and things like that. Yeah. So it's impressive. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So Marcus, tell me a little bit about Neurometrics. You are the technical co-founder for Neurometrics. You guys are doing something very special there, and I want to learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah. So Neurometrics is a company we started back in 2018. And it's interesting. When you have an idea, often, and I would say the most important thing as an entrepreneur is to be willing to pivot, right? When you find you're wrong, don't just keep hammering away at it. Don't give up, which is also another thing that I've learned. But you have to be willing to adjust. And so we knew that a number of us had been working at S&P Global. Actually before that, SNL Financial, where we had a lot of exposure to information about large commercial businesses, small commercial businesses, and all those in between. And what we found was that those small commercial businesses were the hardest to get information about. And we had a theory that we could identify much of that relevant information about these small commercial businesses through AI and the public information that's available on the web. So we started Neurometrics with that focus. And actually, we started with a few other things too that we're doing. We're kind of exploring a lot of use cases, but that was really the first one and is actually where we've landed ultimately with the business. But what we are missing, and this is true for a lot of especially software companies, you're always looking for the killer use case, right? What is it that's going to be like just obvious? You describe it to people. And what we landed on eventually was that there are two really big problems. There are more than two, but there are two big problems within the insurance space. Well, first is classification. Classifying small businesses is very, very difficult. They often are doing a lot of different things. A lot of times the owners of the businesses don't even really know what they would be classified as. And you know, the agent tries to help them. So classification defines a lot of even just the starting point. Are you, maybe will you qualify or not qualify is defined by your classification at the beginning.
Yep, I agree.
And then, yeah, exactly. And secondarily, and just as importantly, is the ability to identify risks in those businesses that do qualify. And risks of things like, do you have heavy equipment on site? Do you have a swimming pool on site? Are you open, more longer hours? And do you have a lot of tenants in the same building you're in that maybe introduce a lot of risk? So those sort of things factor into the underwriting process as well. And all of those are things you can use artificial intelligence combined with public unstructured data to then come to a conclusion on classification and risk. So that was where we landed as a killer use case, but I'll say that it was kind of a roundabout way. But it's not that dissimilar from what we did and what S&P Global continues to do in terms of providing public information about public companies. We're just doing it for private companies, small, and they're usually small and medium-sized businesses that are hard to get that information about.
So basically, you guys are helping us, insurance agents and insurance carriers as well, classify the risk properly, right? And I remember, 20 years ago when I started, I went into a local restaurant and I'm just talking with them. And I know very little about insurance 20 years ago. I'm just starting. And they're like, yeah, we do this. We're a restaurant, but we also do catering, but we're also chefs at home. Now, those are three different things right there.
Yeah.
And I remember, sitting in front of the client going like, well, let me get back to you tomorrow because I got to go, find out how do we properly, rate this risk, and classification being one of the most important things. And nowadays, I would say probably that's our biggest challenge with, especially artisan contractors. What do you do? Oh, we do painting. Do you do more than two stories in height? No, we don't. But we do paint condos. Okay, so condos, two stories in height or more? No, well, some of them are 23 stories in height. Well, that's completely different, right? And we try to guide our clients and explain everything, but the same guy that's doing painting now is doing plumbing, electricity, and other stuff. And having the right classification is what's going to give you the right coverage at the time of a loss, right? That's what we're looking for.
Exactly.
So that's what Neurometrics is targeting right now, or that's what you guys are building, right? Am I right?
Well, it's actually built. We have a number of large carriers that use us today. Been very successful getting that deployed out into production. It's been in production now for a number of years, and we just continue to perfect it. One of the things we do is, which is an interesting thing, by the way, we take the risk questions that are asked by the carriers, and we help with taking those and providing them with risk answers. And what's interesting, by the way, is the carriers often come at the same types of businesses with different questions. So that's been valuable for us because we now have this bigger picture view of what different ways to ask different questions. And so our models just keep getting better and better, helping them identify those risks in a more accurate way, which is great.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's funny. Underwriting guidelines are completely different. So almost every carrier has different underwriting guidelines, but almost all of them use ISO forms. And, they will go out and file certain products and things like that. But then you guys would adjust technology for that in order to help us. Because before, we had to go, I still do it every now and then. I'm old school enough to open a PDF and start looking for every classification. I will do checklists. I will do different risk management techniques to help my client. But I know there's so much technology out there right now, and it's impressive. There's a lot of bells and whistles and things like that, but not all of them will go down with what you guys do with Neurometrics, where you actually evaluate the client and the information outside also. So you go to Google, I would assume, right? State Department and things like that.
That's really, I mean, that was actually a big part of our value. It is a big part of our value proposition. We figured that there was a rich enough data source in the public space that that alone could be used to be able to provide an accurate classification and risk assessment. The problem is that, kind of as you're alluding to there, that every one of those places is different. They're unstructured. You really got to know where you're going. You got to navigate through a lot of different ways to get there. And so a big part of the value we're offering is not just having that AI, you can call it an AI companion that maybe tells you what we think the answer is, but by doing all that footwork, by the way, that footwork happens in 15 seconds. So you're not waiting long, right? Literally you're clicking enter, business name and address, type it, hit enter, 15 seconds, boom, you got back the classification and the risks. But by going out and gathering it from all those places they would otherwise not go, at a minimum, at least they have an alternative view that they can factor into their analysis, which is really valuable. Or if you want to, given our accuracy, you could actually automate that. Everybody does it a little bit differently.
Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah, we work with a wholesaler. And what they do is you input the name of the insurer and the classification, and it will almost all of the time, most of the time, let's just say, they will pull up the information of what they do, at least the industry they're in. So that's pretty awesome. So what are you guys looking for as a next step? Because I know this is all a work in progress and you got to keep going. I mean, it's a technology is never going to end. So what are you guys looking for next?
Well, I mean, it's always a race to do two things. So I'd say I'm going to try to simplify it. I think one of those is continue to increase what we call hit rate and accuracy. So that when you type in that business name and address, making sure that we can actually find something on them. And that's hit rate. And then accuracy is making sure then that what we're providing its answers are the correct answers. So that's always, because you're never 100%. So, but the closer you can approach 100%, the better, right? Then on top of that, there are lots of different areas where we think we can continue to add value. It may sound similar, but there are hard problems like being able to provide. Well, first of all, being able to provide who is it that you are, who are your neighbors, who are your nearest neighbors, and this is a difficult problem when you're in a building with a lot of other companies who have different risk profiles, or in a strip mall, but more importantly, like within a building. Okay, is there a way for us to be able to factor your neighbors into the risk model, right? Because you're in that same building with them. Therefore, look, if there's a restaurant on the first floor and your business is on the second floor, there's obviously now these restaurant risks, even though you're not a restaurant. So, is there a way for us to be able to do that kind of risk associated with your business, or just if you're somebody who owns the building, what are your lesser risks, right? And all those types of things that we want to be able to provide that are small extensions to what we already do. And you can imagine that kind of going out into other areas beyond what I just described. But we're adding a lot of features, we're adding a lot of capabilities. We're also finding that we're useful as a product during the life of that engagement. If you think about a life cycle, when you're doing monitoring, you're checking in, you're seeing it, valuing whether or not they've changed their businesses. As small businesses go, they often will change anytime, especially when the economy takes a hit. They'll probably try to add some other businesses. It's a good time to go back and reevaluate the risk profile. When they come up for renewal, when they want to do workers' compensation, we actually provide a product for workers' compensation as well to tell whose policies are coming up for renewal and do they qualify for your risk appetite. So these all fit within the same wheelhouse, but it turns out the wheelhouse continues to grow and grow and grow as we add more features.
That's true. That is so true. Yeah. And I'll ask you one thing and, answer the best way you can. Sure. When you look at it, you have worked with other industries as well, right? For many, many years. Mm-hmm. When you look at the insurance industry, we have done a wonderful job trying to keep up now, I would say in the last 10 years, maybe with technology. But I feel every time I look at our industry and I look at other industries, I feel we are so behind on technology. And again, I might be wrong because I don't know what goes on behind doors, especially from the carrier side. And I get it. You have wonderful carriers that they have amazing technology and apps and things like that. Us as independent agent, we get to have things like Glovebox or the insurance app where we can provide our clients with an app as well for them, to log into the policies. But there's so many other things and there's a world out there in insurance. And of course, you have to divide it property and casualty, health, life, and many other things. But I feel, I don't know if you ever, have you ever met Keith Savino? Do you know who he is? No, I will connect you with him. You guys will probably enjoy spending time together. Yeah. He's an insurance guy. He's an insurance agency owner. He's been an agency owner for over 30 years, I think now. He was one of my mentors, and I appreciate him. but he's actually in his heart and knowledge a technology guy. So it's very interesting because one of his dreams was, and it still is listen, what if the customer can go into our website, quote the auto there, and let's just say they get 6-7 quotes, and then click a button, which he calls it the buy button, right? And that will automatically bind the policy in our website, except the client has to go to our website, from our website to the other carrier, to the carrier's website, and then process all that. Then we get the information back. Now we got to go back into our systems, process everything, right? And of course, some policies were downloaded or whatever, but we got to process all of that or a lot of that information. So do you feel we're so behind in technology in terms of the insurance industry, or are we getting there? Are we doing a good job compared to other industries, of course?
It's a totally legitimate question, and it's a hard one to answer. And I say that because there are so many factors that play a role in the ability for insurance companies and really any company in the United States to adopt technology. Insurance is a industry that is risk averse by definition.
That is true. 100% true.
Yeah. So you get that culture that's there. So let's acknowledge that, right? But I would say, though, that the opinion I've been formulating as time goes on here is that a big role here that is actually slowing down adoption of technology is not the carriers, it is regulation. Okay. At the end of the day, and look, I do want to say one thing we've done well in the United States and in other countries, and not well in others, which is not a technology problem. It is a cultural problem where some people view insurance as being as a complete waste of money, right? Mm-hmm. So we at least have done a good job within the U.S. of helping people understand the value of insurance, which means now that the product is there and there are some innovations that are occurring there. So that's a good thing. But you actually just gave a use case a few minutes ago where there's another business that's not an insurance business that wants to be able to offer insurance. Well, this is where the regulation gets into play, and it is causing massive friction. It's not just in the insurance industry, it's in the banking industry. You know, it's across the healthcare and others where the regulatory frameworks that we have in the United States and the way that we run our regulators, they force these silos mm-hmm. so that if you want to have a certain company also offer services from another industry, so industry A offering service for industry B, well, it's very complex.
Yes.
Because now you got to understand both industries and the interplay, and is there something there that's causing an arbitrage opportunity or some sort of you know, material non-public information that gives them an edge, you know, where they can front run this person or that person, and then it creates this imbalance in the market that's unfair. Well, the problem though is that if you don't allow that to happen, what happens is you slow down the pace of innovation such that it does not keep up with the needs of the people. It doesn't keep up with the needs of the businesses as well that need to grow. So yes, we are slow, in my opinion, but I think there are a lot of factors. I would say if there's one factor that would make the biggest difference would be, is there a way to, and I'm not suggesting get rid of regulation, but rather is there a way for us to be able to create a framework that enables businesses to be able to integrate across regulated industries? That to me would then enable insurance to be able to be integrated across just about everything mm-hmm. and enable the other party that's presenting it to feel comfortable that insurance company is going to be a viable counterparty to the risk that they're presenting, even though they're not an insurance company, if that makes sense. That's the real problem right now.
Well, I think like you perfectly mentioned, by the way, thank you for bringing that over, the regulation part of it. It is so hard in terms of the insurance industry. You mentioned the word insurance and it's already complicated, right? That's why I made this podcast and this firm, because I want to try to bring it back and say it's fun. It's an industry where we have everything. We have technology gurus like you. We have salespeople. We have, you know, executives. We have accountants. We have engineers. We have adjusters. You name it. We have everything. You know, some industries will only have one thing in particular. We have everything. We're blessed by having all that. But regulation is very hard. Regulation is tough because, you know, for those listening to us, if they don't know this, insurance is regulated on a state-by-state basis. But at the end of the day, because insurance is regulated on a state-by-state basis, you have an insurance company crossing state lines, and then one state might be more advanced than the other one. I completely understand that will be the biggest challenge, especially for you guys in technology, because the technology that you can use in Florida, it will necessarily apply in Kansas, right? Or in Iowa or in Washington or things like that. So So yeah, regulation plays a huge role in this. And another thing, insurance being very traditional, let's just use that word, it's a traditional industry. It also depends on the insurance commissioners in every state. So whether it's a, it's an insurance commissioner that, you know, likes tradition and he keeps things the way they have always been, or you would have an insurance commissioner that might be a little bit more aggressive and willing to experience or at least explore new opportunities, especially with technology. So
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, regulation is huge. Regulation is crazy.
Well, what you just described, though, is it requires somebody who's either in a regulatory position or a legislative position to be willing to take risk for their career. And because if they approve something and then it gets linked back to them, because look, anytime you do innovation, it's risky. There's a discovery process. Some things fail, some things break. And so that means that whoever is now authorized that has to be sufficiently comfortable enough to be able to accept the fact there's going to be a failure, maybe some epic failures. But that's the only way you learn. And by the way, that's how we, if you go back into the history of insurance, that's how we came to the models we have today, were through these like catastrophic events. And then, okay, well then how did the industry as a whole and the governments even in many cases respond to that? And then they make some other changes. If you don't allow that to happen, then what you end up with is a world where opportunity is lost. And to be honest with you, maybe just to bring it back to the small person, you know, small business owner, they end up getting screwed in the process in some ways because there are opportunities because they don't have a lot of capital. They can't take on a lot of risk. Mm-hmm. And now they're stuck in a position where they may not be being represented appropriately. They may be paying more than they should be for them in their premiums. They may not even be getting the coverage they think that they are getting they're going to get. Exactly.
Yes.
And so those sort of things are the downsides of what we're talking about right now. So
yeah, and that, I mean, it's amazing how you bring back the small business, because I'm a true believer that small business is the backbone of America. And, yeah. And I mean, we are the ones helping the community. I say we, because I'm as an agency owner, I own a small agency, right? And it's a small business. We help our communities. We sponsor schools. We get involved as much as we can, because in our nature, we just love to give back, right? And we love helping people. That's why we got an insurance, because at the end of the day, there's many wonderful things that people say about insurance. There's also many bad things that people say about insurance. But I can tell you one thing, when a catastrophe happened, yes, there will be mistakes. Yes, there will be claims that will not be paid for whatever reason. But still, there are billions of dollars paid by the insurance industry. And I'm a true believer. I'm very passionate about this. When I say the insurance industry has in its hands the ability to rebuild an entire nation, an entire state. People think it's government. No. It's the insurance industry. That's how we get back on our feet. Of course, government helps and FEMA and things like that. But the insurance industry plays a huge role.
Yeah, I agree with you. And maybe just to round it out, I'd say, I think it's two things. It's you've got insurance and you've got credit. And if you could really, again, you can't really do this well today. If you could merge those two together, now you would have an opportunity to be able to really satisfy the two most important building blocks for people to be able to build their businesses, right? Access to capital and the protection of that capital. And that's where we're struggling right now when we talk about this, because you're forcing the small business owner to have to go to two different places to be able to go do that. And that is a very problematic, difficult thing for them. And they have to become experts in things that they're not experts in, you know? Okay. But I agree 100% with what you're saying. It's so true. So true.
Yes, it is. So I'm going to challenge you to something. I want you guys at Neurometrics to try to figure out how we can rescue the United States of America and Puerto Rico and USVI from all the craziness that's been going on with the, you know, FEMA and the National Flood Insurance Program. I mean, there have been many changes, and I think the technology is there to help. Of course, there's politics involved and many other things, but that's one of those risks that I think we're at the point already that people understand and realize a flood can happen anywhere, any second. Everybody thinks floods are only in Louisiana or Florida or, you know, Puerto Rico or whatever. No, they're everywhere. So they can happen anywhere, everywhere. Montana, the state of Montana, half of Yellowstone was flooded. Nobody thought that could happen. The other day, even here in Southeast Florida, we had a 1 in 1,000 event. So it is complicated. So I challenge you guys to see if your technology and your product can figure out a better way to help the industry regarding that risk. I hope you take it with good hands.
No. I think there are a lot of those opportunities like that. And I, in all honesty, that is a thing we have a mission to do, which is to be able to continue to increase the amount of risk questions we can answer reliably, because we believe that when that 1 in 1,000 event occurs, We don't want the small business owner to not have their claim, you know, satisfied, or to not have some way to at least get protected. And but that can only happen when you have, and by the way, this describe a little bit about my history. I worked at a company called S&P Global. S&P Global is very large on Wall Street. The division in particular I worked in most recently there as CTO, this is not just a little while ago, was in the ratings division, ratings, mm-hmm. rates, bonds, and other things. Well, one of the things that is a challenge is when you talk to a regulator about how you rate something, this is true also in insurance, very similar, you have to be able to describe your methodology. And that's why we see so much variation between the insurers and the questions they ask. Look, if you can ask, you can get to the same end state through lots mm-hmm. of different questions, lots of different ways. So that methodology is what really matters. So the question is then, to just build on what you're asking me to do, is identify the methodology, and we would use AI because that's the tool that we typically use to be able to link different data sources, then produce a methodology that's understandable. This is where the hardest piece, because it has to be really simplified, right? So that anybody can look at it and say, yeah, that makes sense. And I can attribute it to the right data sources. There's transparency, et cetera. And then link that in to the policy, or to provide it as an option in the policy legitimately, or priced at the right level, such that if it's a 1 in 1,000 event, I'm not paying for it like it's happening every year.
Yep.
And I'm not going to get rejected when it does occur. So those are the tricks, you know.
There you go. It's you got a big challenge ahead of you, but I know you can do it. So listen, Marcus, I want to ask you two more questions. One question is, what's going on with ChatGPT? Where are we headed with all this new AI? I mean, how do you see insurance agencies, specifically independent insurance agencies, using AI to their advantage? I mean, give us some light.
Yeah, it's definitely a hot topic these days. And, you know, we could probably do just a whole podcast on that, I think.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, my opinion, well, obviously, because I'm biased, of course, but being surrounded by technology my whole life, and being that being a passion of mine, I think it's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. I think that we have to, as a human race, we have to continue to move forward with technology and take on some of those risks. With ChatGPT, it looks like magic. It really is still all math. Mm-hmm. And it's all information as well, which again is just another type of math. And the larger amounts of information that you can process, the more abilities that you can create leveraging that information. And so ChatGPT offers the ability now to be able to have that massive corpus of information utilized to ask questions and assess things. There's actually behind the scenes, and this is to me where I'm hoping OpenAI, Google, and others are going to go with their systems. I think the real magic, which you can actually see parts of now in their APIs, is not the interface to ask a question and get an answer, but rather there's these mathematical models that does everything in the background. And fortunately, in OpenAI's case and also in Google's case, they do offer the mathematical models that you can then utilize in your own models to be able to then do some really advanced computation. And you can do so in a way that preserves privacy. Preserves, you know, helps you avoid a lot of the privacy issues that are there and stay compliant, but still also attribute what you're doing to the data that you then pull into that model. So I feel like ChatGPT, or more importantly, the platform underneath it as it evolves, is going to be essential as the building blocks that companies use to be able to then more accurately answer questions. It's not going to replace people, but what it will do is it's going to enable us to be able to take care of those basic cases that are easy to answer, easy to underwrite, and take care of those in a way that allows us to mostly not be involved, and allows then those cases today where you want to do a really interesting and intriguing business mm-hmm. as a small business owner that people today are rejecting because they don't understand it. It allows now for there to be time from the underwriter, augmented through some more information from AI, to then now to be able to underwrite that business, which, by the way, the cool thing about that is most of those businesses are ones that are innovating. They're taking on additional risk to be able to push something forward. And now you get this acceleration of innovation in the economy, right? Yep. Because now the underwriters aren't occupied underwriting an ice cream shop. They're occupied underwriting some sort of a innovation. I'm not sure what the innovation might be, but whatever it is, that's where they're putting their mind share. You're not hiring more people to do that. You're using the same labor pool that you got today. That's the power of technology. And I think people get afraid because we all get into this rut of doing the same thing every day. Oh, it's going to take over my job. And no. You've got to learn how to be able to use it as a tool and stay up with it. And so I think ChatGPT has opened that door and finally made it clear how AI and math and information in large quantities can enable that to occur. The trick is going to be, maybe just to wrap up my monologue here, is to do kind of what you were describing earlier. These large carriers, are they innovating enough? The question is, more maybe a little bit differently, do they have the right people on staff who can look at the models that are there, that are
there
being, and the APIs as they become exposed, such that they can take advantage of them fast enough to be able to bring that value in, you know, for their customers, right? So yeah, I'm really, really bullish AI. I think it's going to make a huge difference, but I think it needs to be looked at the way I just described, not as a threat.
I love it. I'm a huge, and I tweeted this. I made a tweet at like a year, 2 years ago, and I said, in insurance, we need to embrace technology. It's period. It's the way it is. And like you just mentioned, I'm a huge advocate of that, which is technology is not here to replace anyone at all. In insurance, the human concept, the human aspect part of the equation or the relationship, it's always still going to be there. So what technology is going to do is going to make us better. It's going to make us look better. It's going to make us perform better. It's going to make us better professionals. And you know, to hear that from somebody like you, you know, a CTO, it makes me very happy because you kind of validated my point, which is true. And the way I look at AI, OpenAI and ChatGPT and all these new ones, I feel like it's the new, kind of like the new internet. You know, when the internet was happening, you had 80% of the population say, nah, that's not going to happen. Y2K, blah, blah, blah. And then 20% of the population, which ended up becoming billionaires, most of them, ended up embracing the internet and they could see what was going to happen next, right? So with OpenAI and that kind of thing, that's how I visualize that, you know, in the next 5 years, this is not even going to be a conversation. This is going to be what it is. So, well, maybe sooner. Who knows? Maybe sooner. And we keep evolving and
I think so. I think, you know, these things move at they move at exponential rates, especially in the early days, but often indefinitely. And I agree. I think the main challenge, which by the way, we could even have a podcast on this.
I know.
It's going to, there are technologies and circumstances. We'll take the internet, we'll take crypto, we'll take other types of technologies. They typically are a fractal. And what I mean by a fractal is that they kind of go ebb and flow. And we're seeing the same thing happen with AI. And if you compare where AI is today to where these other technologies were, I mean, crypto is on a downswing right now, but it's going to swing back up again. But the innovation that's going on there is massive. The innovation in AI is massive. The internet continues to evolve as a common platform. What's going to happen is we're going to see that what today requires massive data centers to process, will then, through the magic of math and cryptography, will be shrinking down to then be able to operate on your phone and on your watch. Same magic today that can only be done in a large data center could be done on there, not because the data is stored on there, but because the math is stored on there that basically has all the computation that occurred. That is when the game changes for everything. And the trick for the carriers and for, of course, service providers like us, or product companies like us, is to be able to keep up with that so that we continue to evolve our products to be able to take advantage of that. And that we're sensitive to the fact that it's today requiring external, you know, cloud-based systems, but eventually is going to become local again at some point. And then when it does, okay, what kind of value can we continue to add on top of that? So anyway, this is a conversation I'm having with a lot of colleagues on this and where these things evolve and where the future is going to go. But very exciting to me because it means once it goes on your phone or on your watch,
it's game changer. Oh yeah, exactly. It's game changer. Thank you so much for sharing that. I can't even wait for that. It's as it is right now. It's everything that has happened in the last, I would say even after COVID, we kind of advanced ourselves technology-wise 8 to 10 years. Yeah, again, I'm going to bring you back my grandma. She was doing Zoom. Whereas Zoom, before COVID or any other, you know, video platform, it was spoken only on the large companies or mega corporate or whatever. But now you had, you know, an 86-year-old woman doing that thing. So it's impressive. It's impressive where we're headed right now and where we are.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah. So, I see it very positively.
So I'll tell you one thing, Marcus. I really appreciate you. I thank you so much for your time. I want to be very respectful about it. But I can tell you one thing that impressed me the most. First of all, you know, Claire and her partner, they're very good friends and I respect and I value them and appreciate them a lot. But on your LinkedIn profile, you put something that almost nobody does, which is to me, it's stood up and it's kind of unique. which is you believe that integrity and transparency are our most important principles. And that's amazing because not everybody believes in that. And to me, that's just, you know, basically you gain all my respect.
Thanks.
I would imagine coming from technology, there's many things that can be hidden, and there's, you know, you as somebody very knowledgeable from the corporate side, there's many things that transparency might not be as, you know, cookie cutter as it is. But yep. When you mentioned that, I mean, what do you mean exactly? Because I mean, I loved it.
Yeah, thank you. At the end of the day, you know, my belief is, this, you know, it gets philosophical, right? At the end of the day, these sort of things too. But my feeling is, though, you can see companies, countries, you know, people, you know, if they don't have integrity, eventually things break down. And ultimately, my feeling is, if you want to build a legacy, you want to build something that's a positive legacy, it has to be built on something that people can trust. To me, the most valuable asset that you and I have is the trust that we bring to any relationship. And that's something that's not worth trading for something else, right? Not only that, right, what I've also found is that while we can't control our circumstances in life, I do know, though, that the more you use trust as a backbone, it does allow you to control more than less, right? Because like if I have something go wrong, I make a mistake and I own it, I've found people are way more likely to work with me on correcting it than if I try to hide it. Same is true with customers, right? They want to know if you have an outage, or like, where did the data come from, or how did you compute this? And some people want to make it sound like it's more than it is, or hide it. But I found that customers will even use a product that's subpar. I'm not saying our product's subpar.
Of course, I understand. You know,
but they will, because they trust it, because they know that what they're offering is transparent, it's believable, it's supported. By the way, probably one of the best places I learned this in was in the financial industry, where when you're working in the financial industry, you want to make sure you've got facts.
Yes.
So you're going to go to wherever the source of those facts are, and what people are buying, they're not buying the numbers, they're buying trust. And so to me, I just, through all those experiences and also just some personal stuff, you know, I found that being ethical and trustworthy just has a tendency to allow you to just, you know, have a little more control of your life, but also just have a little bit of a better life than the alternative. So
I love it. Yeah. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate those words. And those are very kind words, and they speak very highly of who you are and your values. And like you say, building a legacy, especially in the insurance industry, it's hard. It's very hard sometimes. It's tough. It gets, you know, sometimes for many reasons, we just want to win an account and we forget something, or the client tells us something and we don't say it how we should. So transparency and integrity are so important because, you know, you get to build, like you said, your legacy and your reputation. I don't want to get into politics or anything, but you think about it, all it takes is just one mistake, unfortunately. And then you can lose all your reputation and things like that. So, you know, we've seen it happen and it's part of it. So anyways, Marcus, thank you for sharing that. Tell me something about yourself. Tell me something fun about yourself before we go, because I want people to know that you are a technology guy, but you're also a fun guy, because this is Fun Insurance Solution.
That's great. Thank you. These are fun questions, by the way. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Probably, you know, the fun fact, if you will. You know, I think one of the ways to stay up on technology is you have to be somebody who doesn't, kind of gets back to some of the things we've said. You have to believe that moving forward and change is a good thing. And I think a lot of us as human beings get happy with what we got, especially as we get older, because it's comfortable, right? Change is stressful, you know, it requires energy. And so it's easier to just say, no, we're good enough. We're good enough with what we got. I've always tried to stay on top of things, you know? And so one of the things you'll find, it's funny, I was flying home from San Diego yesterday. I'm on the road a lot. And I guarantee you, most cases, 99.9% of the flights I'm on, I'm the only person at my age who has either a Nintendo Switch that he's playing or a Steam Deck that he's playing. And I play video games. I'm open about it, man. And I'm totally proud of it, you know. And the nice thing about it is that, to me, it's an expression of creativity, right? I mean, I love the math that's behind there. I love the storylines. And there's actually some really cool ideas that some of the developers have. You're like, huh, I wonder if you could actually do that.
That is so amazing.
Yeah. So it's fun.
Do you have kids?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah. Okay. They're gamers too, you know.
I can imagine. They probably think they have they know they have the coolest dad in the world when you can just sit down with them and say, I'm going to beat you up in this game.
Yeah, it's great. It's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for sharing that story, because that's pretty cool. Now, you know, if I ever see you on plane, I'm going to say, hey, do you mind if I play?
Yeah, that's me. Well, just find the guy with the game, you know, the handheld console. That would be Marcus.
That is so funny. So, Marcus, people that want to connect with you, what's the best way? LinkedIn, Facebook?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn, but the best way to communicate with me would be on LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn.
Connect and then send me a message. Yep.
Perfect, perfect. Well, I'll tell you one thing, Marcus. I'm very thankful for this. It's been a wonderful week. I hope you enjoy your drink tonight. I know I'm going to enjoy mine.
Cool.
And I look forward to seeing what you and Neurometrics are building for the insurance industry. Thank you for that. We need it. We need more Neurometrics and you know, as much help as we need from the technology industry. So thank you, Marcus.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
This was fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.